Hey everyone, on this week's episode, I'm joined by Peter Menino, the current head coach of the Des Moines Buccaneers. Peter has won a pile of championships, probably none bigger than in 2005 with the Denver Pioneers. He played 7 years pro and won his first NHL start with the New York Islanders. Of all the goalie partners I've had, Peter ranks right near the top in terms of who was the most fun. We may have only been teammates for just over a month, but we had a blast, and it was great catching up with such a good friend. Enjoy! Peter, my old friend, it's great to see your face, to get to talk to you. We've got to fill people in on what you've been doing since you retired from your career as a professional goaltender in 2015 with the Binghamton Senators. Rumor has it you're now molding the minds of the youth as the head coach of the Des Moines Buccaneers. What's new in your world? How'd you end up in Des Moines, and how's it going there so far?
Well, it's great to catch up with you, and any chance you get to catch up with the Rattlesnake, it's special. So I appreciate it. Appreciate you having me on. It's been a little bit of a road. You know, we were talking before a little bit about the retirement process and, you know, what do you want to get into? And I had a lot of influential people along the way. We talk goalies here on this quite a bit. So Derek Lalonde, Seth Appert, Jeff Blashill, guys like that, that I know. Derek Lalonde, especially, who's the assistant coach of Tampa Bay Lightning, he's going to love these shout outs. But he had told me from my first pro year, because he was my college coach for 2 years, he goes, you're gonna coach someday, you know. And I just kind of said, all right. And, you know, in the summers I would do USA camps while I was training and stuff like that, signing with the Islanders and Thrashers and stuff, and I just got into it. So when I retired, Coach Dan Muse, he's the assistant coach with the Nashville Predators now, I got a call through another goalie, Adam Burkel,
who is now the Vaughn rep.
Yes, tremendous Vaughn rep, does a great job, great person too. But he said, you know, the Chicago Steel are looking for a coach. And then, you know, long story short, got in touch. I did 2 years in the USHL with the Chicago Steel there, and 2 years in college. And sure enough, things kind of shook up there this past summer, and Des Moines came, and it's a great opportunity to take on the head coaching role, go from there.
Did you see yourself going into head coaching, though? Because so many times guys like us just get labeled as being, oh, he's going to be a goalie coach, and that's kind of the sky's the limit, right? And your career path has been different from going to the Steel to Miami, Ohio, and now grabbing a head job. Is that what you thought would happen?
Well, that's funny you say that, because right out of the gates, when Berkey talked to Dan and I had some conversations with Dan Muse, my mind was set on getting away from this, you know, specific goalie coaching. I don't know, you know, you kind of have this thing in your mind, and I saw like Appert and Lalonde were close. Jeff Blashill was working up the ranks, and I'm like, well, these guys had that part of them through their initial coaching career, and then they had goals to go after, you know, head jobs like that. And just seeing that and being around that, and then when I had the opportunity with the Steel to coach and do more, you know, have more responsibility and just work with the guys in general, I really took to that. I was really excited about that. And right when I accepted the job with the Steel, I was living in Chicago with my wife. And sure enough, there was a big fork in the road, because an NHL team called and they were hiring a goalie development position. And I went through the interview process and was offered the position. And I was like, whoa, like a month after retirement, you know, and we talk like getting into coaching, it's a decision, right? You know, it's different hours. I mean, you're grinding and it's exciting, but I was.
And you also don't know how often those jobs are going to come up too.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And the one that did come up was in the area I was living, you know, and I was like, oh my gosh, like I was really fortunate. Obviously the organizations were some of the best. And I really stared it down, and with Dan Muse, just the way he was offering me an opportunity with the Steel, and then the USHL level junior hockey special. I was like, hey, let me restart in juniors for coaching, and then I'll work my way up. And yeah, at that point I said to myself, I was like, I want to be a head coach today, you know, versus a goalie coach. That can obviously change year by year, but I was like, at that moment, I was like, this is the road I'm going to go down, and here I am today with the opportunity.
Isn't it surprising that so few goalies have become head coaches recently? You know, you don't see very many in the NHL that have our experience like that. You know, Patrick Waugh, I can think of. Before that, not many guys, right? You know, it's just, we get pigeonholed as just being able to do one thing, which to me is ironic because we see everything in front of us. We have such a good grasp on what it takes to play a defensive system of hockey to win games.
Yeah.
I wonder if down the road we're going to see more goalies back into coaching and if you're just leading the charge for us all right now.
I don't know if I'm maybe just one of the few, but you know, those names
that, on you.
Well, those names I threw at you, I mean, these guys have been doing it. Jeff Blashill's a head coach in the NHL. I mean, he Ferris State, he played goalie. He actually was a goalie for the Des Moines Buccaneers. Derek Lalonde was a head coach in the American League. Mm-hmm. Seth Appert's the head coach of the U.S. national team. There are guys out there. It's just, like you said, far and few. And we do. We see the layers from the back out. And I've always looked at it that way and tried to spin things and given guys different viewpoints when it comes to goal scoring or defending and say, hey, here's what they see. Here's what you should see, you know, and kind of give different angles. And I know you've done that with some NHL stuff. And hopefully it's beneficial. We'll see.
So do you report directly to Scott Clemmensen?
Yeah. Clemmer's awesome. So we have a ownership group and Clemmer is one of the owners. But yeah, I mean, if anything comes up, so Clemmer, he learned to skate at Bucks Arena. So he's from Des Moines. You know, he learned to skate at the arena. It's a really old, cool, really old school, really cool arena. And so he was back visiting family and he came down and saw the work we were doing. So yeah, he's one of the direct owners for sure. But you have a group of them and he's awesome. It's great to have a goalie on that side of things.
Well, he was really a pioneer in Des Moines. There haven't been that many players to come out of there, you know, and that's a direct relation of the Buccaneers. And you're seeing it. Like when you recruit kids, is there any limit to where you'll go to find somebody to play junior hockey?
Yeah, not at all. You go across the world. I mean, we have one kid that's at the Hlinka tournament for USA, representing USA, and he's from Urbandale. He skated. He's like Clemmer. He skated like five, you know, he lived 5 minutes down the road from our arena. Here he is representing the United States, and he's going to go to UMass Amherst in the years to come. But it's hard, right? You can't get everybody out of Des Moines. You got to go all over the world, from Russia to wherever. You got to get players.
Yeah, you got some St. Louis kids probably down the road that are easy to get to. But you'll see it now that it's become such a national, and it's not regional game anymore. You get kids from California, Texas, Florida, Arizona. I mean, how do you find some of these kids? Are they just on the radar or do you have to really go scout them out to get a hold of them?
Well, definitely, you know, through networking, through agents, you got to give, I always give the shout out to agents and coaches and different levels. You know, the higher you are, when we're in college, you know, you rely on junior level coaches, you rely on midget coaches, you rely on advisors. And I say that honestly, like with a lot of thanks to them, because you got to have a trusting relationship for them to want to offer players and give you those tips. And then obviously you got to pound the pavement. You got to get out there. You got to go to the showcases. I mean, I was at skill sessions in summer times. I was in practices. You hear things, but you got to get your eyes on, you know, you got to rely on your analysis and your evaluation or you're going to get in trouble. Obviously you trust in a lot of people and that kind of helps. But the big thing too is there's a lot of showcases, right? So they bring teams from Florida. The select festivals in the summertime bring kids from all over the United States into Buffalo, New York. So that helps for sure. But you got to go out. If you want to build these relationships to recruit them, you got to put in the time.
Well, let's talk about your junior career a little bit because you came out of Michigan as a young man, ended up in Pittsburgh in the North American League, went on to the USHL. What was the North American League like when you were there? Because it was just a year or two after I was. I've got some memories of it that I want to see if they were similar to what your experience was like. So give us a recap of the North American back then.
For sure. No, I was in the last 2 years of what you remember, that old NOL, you know, where we had – we had Texas, we had Compuware, we had this Springfield, Illinois, and Missouri.
And it's before the USHL basically declared themselves Tier 1, right? And then North American became Tier 2. So they used to be like on a level playing field back then.
Absolutely. Ryan Miller is getting drafted in the first rounds. You know, a lot of draft picks. I was the last year that happened. The last year it happened, like you just said, USHL declared Tier 1 status. Compuware folded, the Chicago Freeze folded, the Capital, the Lansing team folded, Danville left and went to the USHL, Texas did a couple more years and it folded. I mean, it changed the landscape of the North American League. And I was in that last year, and that's when I decided I had a commitment to go to Denver. I had one more year of junior hockey. Our Pittsburgh team ended up getting bought and moved to Toledo, I believe. It was Toledo or Youngstown. And the USHL came, and I was like, you know, it's time to take a step here. And the NA combined with the AWHL.
Yeah, the American West League.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep, which special places, right? Bismarck and Bozeman and all that stuff. So they combined, and it kind of spread out quite a bit. And then the USHL took Danville, and it went in a different direction. But, man, was it a war. North American League was awesome. Oh. We had Compeer. I mean, I went to the – my first year in the NA, I was kind of a backup. So we lost in the national championship, and then the next year I was you know, able to start, and we won. And we played the Sioux Indians in the finals, you know, and it was – that was kind of it. That was the end, is Pittsburgh and the Sioux Indians were in the national championship game, and then the whole landscape changed.
And you never stopped winning. You win that league. You won the USHL too, right?
That's a shout out to Jason Kohler. He was our GM in Pittsburgh. He sought me out in midget hockey. I was going through a little bit of a rough patch there trying to find that next step. And he found me, brought me into Pittsburgh, and I got my scholarship there. All the coaches, you know, the whole staff. Yeah. But your GM gets eyes on you and he wants it. It changes your life. So,
isn't it amazing how you've, and really all of us, you play with somebody in juniors or college, and then you circle back years later and end up playing with them? Because I know you did that with Dylan Reese in Pittsburgh. And then even with Dingle, I guess, in Denver.
Yep.
You know, and in junior too, right? You know, I mean,
yep.
It's amazing how hockey works like that. What do you remember of Dylan Reese in juniors?
Oh, man. That kid, he's a beauty. So good story about, just to start off with Dylan Reese. So he got drafted in the NHL by the New York Rangers, and he's a hometown kid.
From Pittsburgh. So playing for Pittsburgh. The Forge, right?
Right, play for the Forge. So the Forge were founded, you know, when he was right in the area. So just like we said, the North American League was really, really at a high level. And I think Lincoln, he'd have to confirm it, they were all over him in the USHL. So he had to make a decision. And Pittsburgh kept him, obviously stayed, and the boys would ride him hard. He's going to love this too, because he was considered the blue chip. We called him Blue Chip. That was his nickname, Blue Chip. And he got so rattled all the time about it. One great story is he hurt his shoulder in one of the games. And after the bus got in late night, they had to unpack to go somewhere else. And the head coach, I think it was Chris Iams at the time, went down underneath and he goes, "I got your bag, Reese." And he grabbed his bag and walked it in. And the boys saw this and they were like, "Blue Chip, you catered to the room." And you know, Reese, he was so rattled. One last one, I mean, I could go on and on, but he had a red Volvo. It was really old. And his license plate.
Like the crash-proof ones, right? That were rolling tanks.
That's right. That's right. Yep. The real crashers. And the license plate was De-Icer. Okay? And I'm like, what is – and that was his nickname, De-Icer. And the story is one day he was on a car. They were riding with a bunch of the midget guys going to a trip. And there was a De-Icer spray bottle in the back of the car. And somehow or whatever, they sprayed him in the face and he couldn't see for like a half hour or like a long period of time. And they were ripping on him, calling him De-Icer. So he went and took the nickname and put it on his license plate. That's Dylan Reese in a nutshell.
You had a guy on that team named Sean Bergstresser too. I got to know Berkey through John Zeiler, who I played with at St. Lawrence. Have you ever played with a more muscular, bigger hockey player than that guy?
So Berkey, we call Jaws. He had that big jaw, and we would always be like, "Jaws." You know, he'd get rattled pretty easily, right?
He kind of had that like perm too. Like he had that super curly hair.
Well, between Berkey and Reeser, I've never seen two guys look in the mirror more than those two guys. I mean, they were so worried about their hair and their bodies.
Tan. It was very tan.
Tan. I mean, it was like this Pittsburgh heartthrob situation. You know, they all wanted to look good and stuff. And I really hope they listen, because those two are ridiculous. But Jaws, a perfect story for Jaws is he had this, was it the S10 pickup? Was that the small version of the
Chevy
pickup?
S10? Yeah.
Yes. He had a Chevy S10 and he had it like custom colored, like this blue. and he loved the Deuce. He loved the Deuce stuff to his pickup. He lowered it. The windows were as tinted as you could get. He put all these spoilers on it. We would be like, "Yeah, Berkey," you know, and he'd get all jazzed up for it, right? And he worked out. He worked at the gym upstairs at the rink that we worked at, Neville Island Sports, which is Robert Morris University's hockey arena. And he would work out up there. One day after practice, he was working, and the cops came, and we were gone for the day. It was after practice. They arrest him, take him down, and he goes, you know, everybody's like, "We heard Berkey got arrested." Next morning at like 7 a.m., we're on the bus waiting to go on a road trip. We have no idea where he is, and we're waiting for Berkey. And sure enough, we wait an hour. They get a hold. They know he's coming. He spent a night in jail because he had unpaid parking tickets.
No way.
Yes. He would take them and he would throw them in his glove box. And he'd be like, "Whatever. I don't need to pay for these." And they caught him. They went and found him at his place of work, put him in the clinker. And he jumped on our bus from jail. And we went on a road trip.
I've picked guys up out of rest stops, but never out of jail before.
Oh, right. Right. But he pulled in. He was coming in hot with his S10 that just put him in jail, and he jumped on the bus. He goes, "I don't want to talk about it," and went right to the back of the bus and shut it down.
Incredible. Well, let's go on to your time at Denver, because, I mean, you guys were so good when you were there. You had incredible lineups. What was it like walking into that good and storied of a university, knowing that, one, you had a great chance of winning a lot of games, but two, that you were probably going to get to play a lot of those?
Well, that's the thing you would understand a lot is growing up where we did. Like, I grew up with CCHA. You know, I was thinking Michigan State. I had all that in mind. I really didn't even know
about as a St. Louis, and it was kind of the same way. You know, you thought of Michigan State. That's like, that was my goal, the only teams I really even knew, you know?
Yeah, totally. I was the same way. I was like, you know, I got recruited by, like, CCHA schools at the time, like Bowling Green, Lake State, and Michigan had their U.S. national team, you know, feeder system, right? Montoya's right. And all that, and Gerald Coleman, and then Michigan State, they had Larry Bakari, you know, all those guys in that age group. So it was kind of like in a weird development time frame. And then all of a sudden I had teams from kind of all over different areas. And I'm like, what is this WCHA? And it sounds ridiculous today, but you really don't know any better. And Denver came. I was in the North American League. They came. And sure enough, a teammate of mine, Mike Hanza, he's a Pittsburgh kid as well. He committed the week before. And then I went out on a visit, and I just loved it. I fell in love with it. Now, here's the thing is I didn't know anything about – and people will believe this or not. I didn't know anything about the success. Like, I knew they were a good program. I started doing some homework. I'm like, this team's really good. You know, like, these goalies are really good that play here. Burkle, right. Dubowitz. I'm going, wow, what's going on here?
And they're all signing big-ticket contracts at the end of their 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it was kind of just starting at the time, right, because Appert and those guys were recruiting and – Doobie was a senior, Burkle was going to be a junior going on senior year. And I remember looking into it and I'm like, wow, they were number one in the nation the year before and they lost to Michigan. I'm like, wow, unbelievable. So long story short, I fell in love with the staff, fell in love with the area, just the whole staff too, from the Heather Weems, who's the athletic director at St. Cloud State. She was my academic advisor, you know, just people like that touched on you along the way. And it was like, I trust these people. George Wozdecki is an incredible person. Steve Miller, Seth Abbott recruited me. I was like, I want to be with these guys. I trust them with my career. And I went out west. I called my parents. I was like, this is where I want to be. And they were like, what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
well, I kind of had the same experience with St. Lawrence where it just felt right when I walked on campus. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And then from there, I mean, you give it all to the staff. And then they hired Derek Lalonde when Seth took the head job at RPA. And they rolled with recruiting, and George is an incredible coach. The program that they founded there, like you said, that's staff. You know, they got to do the work, and then us players, we got to go there and do our work, and then hopefully things gel. So,
I mean, you pretty much split time for your first couple of years with Glenn Fisher, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, and so, you know, you come in though in 2005, pretty magical year to start things off.
Yeah,
I mean, it couldn't have gone much better, I guess, at the end, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. That was kind of said going in there is Fish would have been a freshman the year I played in the USHL after the North American League. So I committed knowing I would defer for a year. And Fish would back up essentially Adam Burkle, who was a senior and just came off a great year. Berkey ended up playing, I think, 90%+ of the games. And Fish was the Edmonton Oilers draft pick. And they said that. They go, you want to play at a high level. You want to compete with Glenn Fisher. You will play. and you could see Burkle and Doogie did it, right? I mean, they both mm-hmm. signed tickets. They both won games. They won championships. I love to compete. I met Glenn and I met all those guys. I was like, I'm in for this competition. It's healthy. And as we know, it gets even crazier the higher you go.
Oh, yeah, the pyramid just goes like this. Yeah. It's cut through.
Yeah. And I mean, you and I are playing together, and we're just sitting there knowing, I know how talented you are. It's just like the respect level in pro, but it started in college for me. It was to know how hard it is and how delicate a start is, essentially, as you climb up the ladder and you try and preach that today. It's just a little different at times, you know.
What was it like winning a championship?
It was amazing. I mean, it's a lot of cliches, but you got a group. You got a special group. You got some really, really good players. But we had depth. We had great leadership from the seniors. We had a really talented freshman group that kind of helped develop as the year went on, because we had great leaders and seniors. A lot of fun characters in that older group, Matt Latch, Folgy, Fosty, all those guys that ended up having really good careers too. They won too, right? They won back-to-back. And Here we were just... We were bullseye deer in headlights freshmen going, oh my gosh, really, everybody wanted to see what we were going to do. And to go to Columbus, and we played the same teams we did in the final five the weekend before in the conference playoffs. So that was kind of unique, right? We played CC in North Dakota, and then we played them again in the Frozen Four. It was kind of cool because you were familiar with them, you know, but it was also hard because you played them all the time. And to have my family there and all that, it's just a special moment without question.
I was talking to Paul Stastny about you, and you were roommates with him briefly there. And he mentioned a couple of things that really made him smile and think about you. And the first of it is that 217, the significance of 217. And every time he sees those numbers, he thinks of you. So why does that happen?
That's hilarious. Yeah. Paulie and I had some fun. We moved in together, nice little two-bedroom apartment behind the rink, no AC. Garden unit. It was a lot of fun. We had good times, and it's my birthday numbers. They're good luck numbers, so I put them on the back of my helmet. You know, little things you do like that from a goalie standpoint, just luck and little things. And I always had it on like my bucket growing up and all the way through pro. I always had it there. So whenever we would see it or whatever, I'd be funny, be like 217, good luck, you know, or whatever on the clock. And Stazzer started to see it in games. He'd be like, hey, 217. Like, we're talking in the middle of a third period at 217 in an NCAA game. And he'd come down and he'd be like, 217. I'd be like, let's do it. You know, we would have a little.
So we had fun.
Yeah. Good light humor, but it was fun stuff. And he's a funny guy, that's for sure.
He said you guys did eat a lot of Taco Bell together, though.
Paul and I accomplished it was a feat. We had a $25 order between two of us, and we took it down. So $25 worth of Taco Bell. Paul and I, we struggled through it. I helped him with an extra taco at the end, but we got it down. And it was disgusting. We ate way too much Taco Bell in college, but we could get away with it, you know.
He also had a good memory of you, though, spending about 8 hours one day making homemade gnocchi for everybody, the good Italian boy that you are. And then they smashed it in like 4 minutes.
It was just him and I. We did spend 8 hours. We did the dough. You know, I had these instructions written out from my mom and my nana back home. And Paul was all in. We were sweating. I mean, it was a garden, no AC in college. And we made these gnocchis. And it was like 8 hours. And it took like 6 minutes. We just crushed them all. It was done. You know what I mean? But we had a lot of fun. He likes to cook. We do. You know, lamb chops, all that stuff at school. And we had a really good time. So
Chris Butler was talking to me about you too. And he said that you had really low mileage on your car, that you had something special going on there to help keep the resale value high on it.
Butsy. Congrats to Butsy too, by the
way.
What
a career, huh?
That's unbelievable. I mean, just we talk about these hometown kids. And,
yeah.
And you know, especially from that area, for him to raise that was awesome.
Well, I knew he was going to be an NHL player too, you know, from the day that he... I think got to junior hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, just an incredible player, but it's interesting how his career peaked and then he found a role with the Blues these last several years. And I mean, it's not unlike you and I, where you're grinded for so long and ultimately you get to the top level, but you just can't sustain it or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But he's been able to make an amazing career in hockey and he has such a great reputation. I'm sure he's going to be good with whatever he chooses to do next.
For sure. Butsy, I always remember when he came to college. When he came on the ice, it was business. Like, you didn't mess around. Any battle drills or net front stuff, like, as a goalie, I love Buttsy because he would clear that net front. Like, he had such a stride. He could skate so long.
He was strong, too.
Oh, he had that sneaky, like, dad strength, too, you know. And yeah. If anybody was around the crease, I mean, he'd put a nice little, you know, pop. He'd lean into him, and you were just like, I'm okay. Everything's all right here. Buttsy's taking care of business, you know. And if you're on the flip side in practice, you would just get into it with him. But it's awesome. Great guy. I was wondering where you got that story from. But it's good to know. We had gotta be careful. It was a little switch there and I kept the mileage off, you know, and resale was higher so we could flip cars. Yeah. So I'll leave it at that. It was a little tricky situation, but, thanks Buttsy for exposing my father like that.
It's kind of like the Red Dragon in Old School, not exactly street legal, took the governor off of it.
Exactly.
So after playing a pile of games, winning yet another championship in college, it came time to turn pro. So was everybody knocking the door down to get you to sign with them? Because you ended up with the Islanders. So what was the process like signing your first NHL contract?
Yeah. You split time. So I split time till my junior year. So it was a little interesting. After my junior year, there's a little talk about, it was actually the Islanders. I had talked to them a little bit, nothing extremely relevant. And even after, I remember Anaheim, Paul Stasny and I, my freshman year after we won, we were playing Narch roller hockey
Derby.
In Florida. Yeah, so to get this, we win and we had a sponsor, like it was all NCAA legal, I think, and all that. We had to Florida, and Staz, one day we're driving back in these vans from the rink to the hotel. We were like a little bit away, 15, 20 minutes, and we're on the bus and we're playing this game. Staz was like, there's about seven of us in this van. And he goes, hey guys, I just got drafted. And we're like, what? And he's like, I just got drafted the Avalanche. And he literally was in Florida in a van playing roller hockey. And he got drafted in the second round. And he goes, yeah, I just got a call. And we're like, what? And we were all pumped. And it was like nothing even happened. And
he didn't even go to the draft. That's amazing. Cause he was rated really high too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause he was a late, I think he was a late birthday, so he went freshman year and then got drafted out of college instead of juniors. And, I mean, he was a heck of a junior player. I mean, 2 years, I killed it in Omaha. He could have easily went there. But winning it and then that kind of even took a step up for him, you know. So he literally was just in the van in Florida playing roller hockey, and he had just hurt his wrist the game before. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, like they're going to kill us back at Denver, you know. And
yeah.
Here he is drafted. We were sitting in the hotel room together, but – you know, I remember there was a team. Remember David McKee?
Yes. He's from Texas. He played at Cornell. Yep. He was the heir apparent to David Lenevue, and then he signed with Anaheim for the cap.
That's it.
I think he played five games in the A, maybe, total.
Yep. Now, that's a guy that I played in the North American League when he was with Texas. And we went head-to-head all the way to the championship. And then in college that year, Anaheim had called me, and it was between kind of making a decision, and he went to Anaheim. And then I played 4 years because just nothing really came. You know, I didn't really have anything in front of me. And I needed the time, right? Like, even if it was there, this was the best thing for me. And then when it came to my senior year, you know how it is. You go through some teams, but, like, one sticks out, one's aggressive. And they had a lot of conviction and understanding of where their situation was. And I just got excited for it. It fit for the timing. And I got opportunity with the Islanders.
Opportunity, yeah. You played in the A the first year out of school, and you ended up making your NHL debut. And in the Coastal, you did all three leagues.
I did. That was an incredible year.
Where'd you start the year? Was it in Utah?
No. The Utah. So I signed. It was Jan Denis and I slated for the American League. That's why I was like, I got to sign here because I'm going to get that opportunity.
Right.
And they had a lot. They had Dubowitz. You know, they knew college, and they kind of had the right path for me. They said I was going to start in the American League and everything. So I was thrilled, right? Very fortunate.
Yeah, there's not many of those jobs available every year. You might get two or three college free agents that end up in the American League.
Right. And I remember, it's funny because then I signed with Atlanta the next year. They had a contract issue. So I almost always wonder if it would have been different. But anyway, I go to the American League, and you remember Ricky DiPietro, unfortunate injuries. That's another reason it was like, this is an ideal place to go to. And sure enough, I think I played 6-7 games, and I had a great start. Probably like almost too good for me, because I was still like figuring out the American League out of college, you know. And Sudsy, Sudarshan Miraj, was our goalie coach. He's outstanding. He was helping me figure out the pro life and how to train and play at that level. Anyway, 6-7 games, and boom, Jan, because there was an injury, Jan was up. I get switched right away, and I'm in the NHL after 6-7 games in the American League. And I remember just being like, oh my gosh, like, what is happening? You know, so it was really quick. I had my place freezing in the water there in Bridgeport. Everything was settled in. And so then, you know, I was up. My first stint is when I got blasted by Boston. I got thrown in the third period. You'll appreciate this one.
And this is your debut? Your first game?
This is debut. Joey McDonald was starting.
He's a relic, too, I heard.
He is incredible. He's an incredible person. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, he started. It was one of those weird time Boston games, like earlier in like the mid morning or whatever. They do those early ones. So we had like a weird pregame. Anyway, third period, they're the first place team in the league. They had everyone, Savard, you know, Wheeler, Kessel, they had them all. And we were like dead last. And there was 13, 14 minutes left in the period. And sure enough, Joey led in like 4 or 5, whatever it was. And you could just tell, you know, as a backup, you're going, oh boy. And you're thinking like, no way, this is going to be my first time in the net. Like, it's like 12 minutes left. It's best team in the NHL. And I haven't played. I barely practiced, Kenny. I was like barely, you know what I mean?
And, yeah. But you know, sure that enough, all the eyes are on you. Like the guy with the camera, the TV producers got the for sure pan straight to you on the bench thinking, this guy's going in.
And I'm looking hard left and looking at the ice going, Gordo, don't call me. And I hear something. I kind of take a little look down to the right. He's yelling because you can't hear a thing. Boston was going nuts. The place was packed. And he's pointing to go. And I'm like, well, here you go. I jumped in there, and that was the start of it. So, but really, to sum it up, like I did that went poorly. I got sent down right after the game. And then I battled. And there was a point where there were so many injuries for like 4+ weeks, I didn't even practice or play a game. And then it led right into the All-Star break. And, you know, not the Islanders are the Islanders. It is what it is. But you had to, because there's so many injuries with Ricky, and they're trying to figure it out and all that stuff. And I was going up and down, up and down, up and down. I'd miss practice. I'd back up a game. I'd go down, back up a game, like 4 weeks. And then All-Star break came. And I had four days off with no equipment. And I'm in Tampa, Florida with my cousins. And they call and they're like, hey, we got to get you back to Atlanta for backing up a game against the Thrashers. And I'm like, my gear's in Bridgeport. So they went to Bridgeport, got the gear, flew it out, and I met them. They flew me from Tampa off of All-Star break in the American League to an NHL game. And I hadn't practiced for 4+ weeks. So that's where that happened, is they were like, well, you haven't played. Like, there was a goalie, you would remember him, he was a Euro with Dallas. I can't remember his name.
Tobias Stefan?
That's him. Yeah. And they
needed that terrible mage mask.
Yes. Yes. And they worked a deal where he would come in for 2 weeks to Bridgeport and play games and an assignment. And they would assign me to Utah to get games played as well. And I did. I played, I think, 9 or 8 games in 2 weeks. I played a ton of games. And I'm telling you, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was to play games again, settle down, get confident, and then go back up. And that's when I got my starts later on.
So who was your first? Yeah, who was your first start against the NHL?
Chicago Blackhawks in Chicago.
Oh man!
Yeah,
how'd it go?
It was good. We ended up winning. I saw a lot of rubber. You know, you had Kane having breakaways. They had Havlat at the time, and that was the crew. I think they won the Cup the year after that. Bufflin. It was cool. I got to play against Nikola Havabulin in my first NHL game. It was special. I mean, my parents were there. My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, was there. I mean, you know that rink. It's
crazy,
it's,
man.
It's crazy. Yeah, it was a dream. It was a dream come true. We won. I got pelted, and so it's just one of those things I could sit back and say, like, hey, that was the goal. Obviously, you want to play a lot of games, but you know that was the goal, to play, and then to get a win like that was. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Can you remember what your first feeling was coming off the ice?
Well, do you remember in United Center, when you walk from the chute, it's tricky. You got to step up.
Yes, you do. And you're already walking uphill to get out onto the ice.
That's right. For warmies, I clipped it. I clipped it, but I held on. So all I remember was like, I just got to get over that step and jump on the ice. And then from there, honestly, it's like a blur because there was a lot of action. I just remember like trying to take a deep breath, stay in it. You know, and you kind of, as you know, as an athlete, the crowd kind of goes away and you zone in on the game and you listen to the music and all that stuff. So that was like kind of the way it went. And then you don't realize it till after, and you get in the locker room. You're like, did that just happen? You know, it's just another game, but you're just fighting. You're fighting to get the win. And that was kind of the routine. Scott Gordon was our head coach, and he came to me. This is what happened before the game. I was in the chute. I'm looking up in the stands. This is before warmups and everything. I'm by myself going like, oh, this is going to happen. And I look over, and there's Gordo. And he goes, word for word, I'll remember it like it was yesterday. He's like, don't play the puck.
Stand your net.
Yeah. This is before my first NHL start. He goes, don't play the puck. If the puck's rimmed around and you stop it, you get right back in that. Leave the puck. Don't play it. Don't play the puck. And I look at him. Oh, the first thing he said to me was, he goes, how many assists do you have? And I go, 3. And I had 3 on the season, which was a really good, you know, a really good start. And he goes, and he didn't know what to say because it was random. But I mean, I was decent at playing the puck, nothing great. And he was like, and then he went into that tangent, leave the puck, leave the puck, leave the puck. So after the first period, we had a power play and there was a dump coming down to the dot. And Mark Streit's coming to get it. I stop it. I corral it, just push it a little bit to the side of the net so we can, you know, kind of get speed and go. After the first period, I'm like, okay, we're doing all right. We're even. He comes right up to me and he goes, don't touch the puck. Leave the puck. And I'm like, everybody's laughing in the room. I'm like, well, Strider asked for it. I was going to give Strider the puck. He's our power play QB. And he's just like, leave the puck. And he leaves the room. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So he was funny. I liked Gordo, but what an interesting situation there, you know.
I'm trying to think of what gear you were wearing back then, because I always remembered you in Brian's. Yeah, but Brian. You also wore a little bit of TPS at some point. What did you prefer for gear? Because you were pretty old school in kind of how you like to strap things and wear it. But were you always Brian's in a TPS or Sherwood combo?
Yeah. The TPS Bionic pads and gloves were pads I loved in juniors in the North American League. And then I switched to Brian's pads, which were really old school Brian's pads, the A-Max, you know, straight 3 rolls, you know, it was legit, right? Stuffed right. And hand stuffed and everything. So I wore those. And then when I went into school, the DX2 came out for Brian's. And so I switched to the DX2, which was still a really soft. It wasn't, you know, like the sturdy Bowers that you have. It wasn't a real stiff pad. It broke down real nice, like Brian's pads, but it was a flat front, right?
Right.
So I wore those through, I switched my senior year because I had A-Max pads all the way through my junior year. So when I went pro, I wore my first year with the Islanders, I wore DX2s. And then at the end of the year, they came out with a new pad. And it was a lighter version 3 roll. And what were they, the Sub-Zero, something like that. And that's, I had like a demo set. And I was wearing those at the end of the year. And that's what I wore for my starts, was that set. The TPS glove was my favorite. I love TPS gloves. The glove and the blocker just seemed really thick and it had a great look to it and everything. So I tried to duplicate that for years with Brian's and they did a fairly good job. Like some years you see me wearing it and other years it's like, I got to go back. And then, as you know, TPS got bought by Sherwood. Sherwood took their patents with their gloves and I loved that feel that they had. It wasn't like the baseball flap. It was the grab, like you almost had like a ball on your hand and I needed that grip, and the break was kind of right at your knuckles, you know what I mean? So I played with it. I struggled to find it because Brian's worked with me. They were great. Chris Joswiak and Rio, their designer, they're incredible people. It's just, you know how it is. You just got to find what's comfortable. So yeah. I was a little all over the place, Kenny.
Did you always have an appreciation for the old school though? Because you did have some killer retro sets of gear.
Yeah, always did. I mean, because you know, those pads I wore, the Brian's, those the thief design. I had the eyes in Pittsburgh once. I had those. And do you know Shane Clifford, the goalie coach in Pittsburgh area?
Mm-mm.
He was with the Pittsburgh Penguins quickly. He's with Everett, does a bunch of junior hockey. He had those old school Bryans. And when I wore those, there's something about it. I always wanted to go back. I always loved the soft feel. So when I wore all the Brian's pads you saw me wear, if you asked their rep and their manufacturer there, they would get frustrated because I still packed the sides of my pad. I hated the one piece foam. I needed it to break down. I find it to be real tense on my knees and it would really, really hurt my body. I didn't like any of those soft kind of the Bowers and stuff like that, that everybody uses today. I could never use that stuff because it would just, I would hit the ice and it would be loud. It would be real tense on my knees. And I needed softer, especially for rebound control too. I needed to kind of hit and absorb a little more rather than the deflection kind of feel. And that I just love the old school. I love that. And then obviously the designs came from there and that's where I just stuck with it.
Who's the character that you've had on your equipment?
Oh, that's Denver. That's a Denver Boone. Denver had that character. Disney created it for Denver way back when I showed up at Denver. Intergender mascots were there because of Title IX. And I found out about this Boone and they had bumper stickers all over campus. And it was like, save Boone, save Boone. And they wanted to get rid of this. Yeah. And I'm like, well, this is kind of cool. He's kind of like this cult following, right?
Kind of a Ferris Bueller type character.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like this little goofy character. And he made more sense to me because he was this pioneer. He looked like a little fun character, but they had to get rid of it because the intergender stuff. And I just was like, I'm running with it. So I put him on all my helmets all the way from my sophomore year, all the way to my last year of pro hockey. And I would switch him.
And you wore Warwick masks, right?
Yep. Warwick masks and just, you know, great painters, Dave Art to all of them. I mean, we shared the same painter, I think. Who'd you have your last?
Ray Bishop did my last seven or eight. So we shared him. We had him in common.
Yep. He was really good. He's a Michigan guy. So I always loved the idea of Warwick being the mask from Michigan and then the painter from Michigan there at the end of it. So
yeah, me too. Neat. That's part of the reason why I ended up with Bishop is because it was – same thing, that synergy of being in Michigan. And also just flat out, he can get them done quicker because all it takes is him running up to Gary's shop in Port Huron, flip it around and get it to me. Like this year with Philly, I got my mask in like 6 days.
Right. And you got a lot of masks and equipment.
Well, with my suitcase status, I have a lot of masks and equipment. Yeah. Equipment, not so much. I have most of my jerseys and pretty much all my masks. Have you kept a lot of them too?
Yeah, I got all my masks. Got these really cool cases I want to put them in, but I just don't ever stay in the home long enough to put them somewhere.
Right.
But for sure.
Well, after that year in Long Island, though, you ended up going to the Thrashers. Mm-hmm. What was that transition like? How did it go?
Yeah, didn't get qualified. Nathan Lawson ended up, when I was going up and down, was playing in the American League that year. And he's a great goalie. He ran with it, had a tremendous year, and they ended up keeping him. And then they had a lot of the Kosonen. They had that Euro, those two Euros that got drafted.
If you were over 6'5 in Euro, you were drafted by the Islanders. And then they had him for a year or two, and they went back to Europe and came back and signed NHL tickets. That's just how worked for all of them.
That's right. And now I was kind of right there, and Laws was great. I mean, they were excited about him, obviously, you know, size and his puck playing. He was really the goalie. So I kind of got the short end of that, but literally – like I mentioned earlier, was something about the Thrashers. They had seen me the year before in college. And so July 1st, I signed with them. Like it was right away. So I didn't get qualified. And then you hear these stories from all these guys. To have that happen, I was like, oh my gosh, like thank goodness. And I signed with Atlanta. Don Waddell was the GM there. Larry Simmons, they had a lot of people. And that kind of believed me. But I also transitioned from Waddell to Dudley. Dudley signed me on a 2-year deal that following year. But it was awesome. I mean, I really liked Atlanta. I mean, the crowds were okay. Obviously with what happened, you can understand that. I backed up a lot of games there, got in a game myself. Really good setup in Atlanta. Their facilities were really nice. And then their American League team was in Chicago.
Which is a top tier franchise.
Yeah. And when that happened, I was like, oh, we got to get this done. And my wife was working in Schaumburg at the time. So we literally, she worked 5 minutes away and the rink was 5 minutes away. So I lucked out big time with the Thrashers. And the Chicago Wolves, their organization, from Don, their owner, to Wendell Young and Courtney Mahoney, I mean, they're top notch. They're in an elite level. And I was really thankful for my 2 years there. And it was unfortunate when Winnipeg bought Atlanta, because that's what shipped me to St. John's, because I was really excited to kind of build off of that. And when you're with the Wolves, it's a really special family. you know, so.
And it's tough too when you sign a contract that's a couple years long and you think you're kind of laying down roots when that gets up, gets changed. I mean, it happened to me in Portland. And honestly, it happened to me in a couple other cities where I thought there was a good chance of me coming back, but because of logistics and teams moving around, I never ended up having that. And it can really throw you off when it's not what you expect to happen.
Yeah, it's the game of hockey. Expect the unexpected, exactly. I always say, right?
Well, every time you think you've seen it all, you realize you haven't.
Yeah.
At what point in your career did you start messing with guys' orders on the road, though, when it comes to food?
Yeah, that started in good old Andrew Campbell, Soupy.
Yeah.
You know, they did it a lot in Manchester. So I remember one of my first trips, I'm like, what are these pickles in my, I got like a chicken piccata or something, you know what I mean? Or grinding a three letter league bus trip, always hungry league. They're eating
soggy subs, man. You want pizzas or subs after the game? Yeah. Take your pick.
Or you would say cheese wheel, right? Always get your cheese wheel and all that stuff. So I remember that. But they, someone put pickles in my like piccata. I'm going, well, this is not, these aren't capers, you know? I'm like, so I'm looking around.
Good Italian boy, you know what it should be.
Yes, yes. And I pick up on it and I'm like, well, these guys don't know. Like, this is going to go to the next level now, you know? So.
Because you had Bodnarchuk on that team too, as a notorious prankster.
Yeah. Bods was in on all that stuff. We had a great group, really, really good group. And a lot of young guys too. Lynn Vay, Tanner Pearson, Voinoff was there for a while. We had guys that just won the cup, right? So it was a lockout year. And so we would get intense. So you know how it is. Like, you come in, you drop your bag, you set up shop. You would then go get your cup and put the money in and get your order in. Well, guys would like linger and wait till everybody was done doing their order. And I would just kind of hang out. I'd get my tape, I'd get my stick, and then I'd go back and visit and be like, oh, Soupy didn't do it yet because I had to get him back. I would wait for the order to actually be taken, and I would grab the trainer, and I would get the trainer over and say, hey, give me that sheet, and I would change their order. So one day, you would like this story, in Hershey, the order was in, and I saw the sheet. You know, in Hershey, if you're the backup, the chute there, I would always kind of try and sit in the chute wherever I was off the bench because it's just so loud.
Yeah, and you can make your way back into the trainer's room where it's sitting. It's only like 10 feet away.
That's right. And I did that. I went back there, and they usually have the extra Hershey bars, right? So you're getting a little snack and a little sugar for the game. But I go back there, and the sheet was sitting there, and Soupy, I would assume, got me. And I'm like, that son of a bitch, I'm going to get him. So during the game, I call the restaurant, and I'm like, and this is during the game. I'm like, hey, this order's wrong. You need to take the pickles off of this. And then I need you to load them up on this order. So during the game, he thought he had me. We get on the bus. And he was so pissed. He had jalapenos all over his pizza, you know, like epic stuff, right? So we would go back and forth, and we would have to shake hands in the middle of the room because we would be running in and pushing each other, almost wrestling in the room. Well, the best one is years later, I was no longer playing for Manchester. And I got the rink, you know, the visiting room guy for Hershey. We come in there, he had that big goatee, that beard.
Yeah. He's
been there forever. I got his number. So we're talking a year or two later. I knew they were playing a game. I call him. I said, hey, I need you to pickle this guy for me. So he pickles Soupy. And, oh, no, wait. This might have been in Portland with, what was the equipment manager? The guy, the locker room guy, stocky kid.
Danimal. This is when we were together. I remember this.
Danimal, I tell him we need to get Soupy. And he goes there and he gets Campbell. They get killed. They're really pissed. And Soupy, like, I remember, so Robbie Zarnik texts me. He goes, did you get Soupy? And I said, I don't know why, what's going on. I guess he was yelling on the bus at all the guys. Who did this? And he's yelling at everybody. Little did he know it was like me remotely somewhere else in another city. And I got him. So Danimal and the rink guy, like those guys are the best. You know, the Syracuse guy, he's awesome. Yeah. Security guard. There's some great people in the game, isn't there?
Oh, man, it's unbelievable. Like, think about that year in Portland, how much fun we had. Do you remember our little game trying to get the game timer clock to bounce as far as we could in the locker room between periods?
Oh, yeah. So that – that board, because this is a newer rink, right? They're figuring out the clocks and everything. So
yeah, they just renovated the Cumberland County Civic Center, which became Cross Insurance Arena in Portland, Maine. And this is where this happened.
Yep. And I was fortunate to play in both the old and the new setups. What a cool place. Unbelievable.
Love it. Love it. Yep. One of my absolute favorites.
What's your favorite restaurant, just to throw it out there?
Oh, boy, did I ever love Eventide Oyster Company. And I know you're a Street and Company fan.
Yes, yes. Lobster Diavolo for two. Reeser and I split that like 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
You couldn't beat that fresh bread with the salt and pepper and butter everywhere. It was just so good.
Oh, I think they had one person dedicated to chopping garlic and back, too. Remember this game, though? Like, we're trying to get this clock to bounce as far into the middle of the room as we could.
So, remember Razor would always come in and he'd like pound the board.
Ray Edwards, the head coach of the team at the time.
Yep. There was a little red, so it'd be like a little clock for people to understand, almost like a oven timer but thinner, and you put it on the shelf on the board, and Razor would come in. He's an emotional guy. He was hilarious. He'd come in and he'd bang the board, and the clock, remember, it would just fall.
Every time.
And you were playing all the games. I'm sitting there going, and I'm noticing this clock falling. I'm like, okay, we got to do something funny here. So what did I start doing? I took those Air Max pads. I started to put like an obstacle course because we wanted to bang the board. And then we had it set up where it hit one Air Max pad and then hit another. And we were trying to get it to go as far as we could to the middle of the room. And he had no clue. He would come in and he'd bang, and it would just drop. We would just sit there.
It was a month straight, and I was putting the Gatorade towel over my head. I'm laughing so hard. I remember the one time it fell off, and it didn't hit the pad just right, and it bounced straight back up, like 3 feet, almost hits him in his shin, bounces again, and then goes into the middle of the room. I think I had to walk out of the locker room that time. Oh, man. We had so much fun, though, that year. Like, I look back, and like you said, I was playing all the time. Well, and I was playing really well, but I know it's because we were having so much fun. Like, I was so carefree because you're – I mean, I just think about it. Like, the moment you gave Greg Carey the scarecrow in Norfolk the one time because he plunked you like five practices in a row in the shoulders. And you told us before the morning skate, watch this, boys. I'm going to give him the scarecrow. And he comes tearing down the middle of the ice, and sure enough, you stand straight up and down and don't move a muscle. And he absolutely buries it in your glove. He didn't even look.
No. You guys were laughing. All the staff was watching. I did that every single shot. And he ended up, what a career. What a hell of a player. Good kid and everything. But I just was like, this kid's driving me nuts. Everything was high. You knew it. It was like, I'm not giving him any taggers. So it's just straight scarecrow the whole skate. He was a rookie, right? He was a rookie.
He was. You were teaching him. You were putting him in his place a little bit, too.
Well, that was the same. That was the same skate, Kenny. You would appreciate. Biz Nasty came down, and how many guys were out there. And he takes – I always tell this story because it's the funny part of Biz when he says stuff like this. He came down, and the skill sessions were like, pivot, come down, take a shot. Kind of boring, and the goalie's got to be in there. He rings one off the crossbar. It's this, like, weird shot, and he looks at me. He skates by, and this is the first time I'm feeling this person out, this character that everybody talks about. And he looks at me and he goes, NHL shot. And he skates away as hard as he can to the thing. And I'm like going like laughing, but being like, what did he just say to me? And it was like, you know what I mean? So I had fun with him later on with that phrase, but it was like Biz being him, you know what I mean? So anyway.
What were your impressions of the rookie party he set up for us in Boston?
So this will be funny. I don't know if it'll get back to him or whatever, but and you know you'll agree with me. It was probably the worst rookie party like ever put on ever. It was so bad. I mean, we felt so bad for the rookies. Like it was just from the beginning. Yeah, we had a great time. We got on the train. We went from Portland to Boston. And I remember sharing the Boda box with you.
A casual box of wine on the way down.
Just a casual drink. And Lee was there. Mike Lee's a great guy. We were hanging out and. So we go down to Boston and you're thinking like, what a great rookie party this is going to be. We have the ability to do this. You think Boston seafood, you think Italian food, like we could have done anything big time. And Biz set all of it up, didn't he?
Oh, all those connections. I'm going to call my buddy and make it happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Biz Nasty is the connections. And, we went in and we went to some Asian fusion restaurant that was like really average. And we get the bill, and was it, how much was it for bottled water?
$450, $500
for 500 water. Bucks just for water.
And an $800 service charge from some guy that we never saw in the room.
Never saw. We had average service. And I remember guys were going, we paid this for bottled water. And Biz yells out, we don't drink tap water. And everybody's going, yeah, we do. This is the American League, Biz. Like, we were like, what are
you back
doing?
In the Iron League, brother.
Yeah. And then from there, we had that weird hiatus, like an hour. And I think he went to like the W or somewhere. And then everybody's trying to find this club. And we go to the club and he shows up like an hour and change late. And it was brutal. Like, do you remember the club? Like, there was nobody
It was pretty weird too.
It was a weird vibe. We'll leave it at that. You know, things were kind of awkward. And I think guys ended up leaving like an hour later. And it was like, everybody was back in the hotel or a different bar. So like the rookie party, you had Asian fusion, $500, a bottle of water, a weird club. And then we were done. And that was it. So thanks to Biz. I liked him. He was nice, but tough rookie party, man. Tough rookie party.
You must have had a good one somewhere in your career, though, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you know, pretty good one we had that always stuck with me was Bridgeport. We had Mark Watt. Remember Watts?
I used to scream at him from the bench to stop killing trees. He was the last guy to be using wooden sticks.
Yes. And really good guy. Great. Like, I had some unbelievable captains. Him. And then we talked about Tom Katsopoulos, but
was Watton the guy though that had to bring the harvest in before he'd come to training camp every year?
Yep. Yeah. What? And I don't say this in a mean way. Is that I remember being in our first meeting in Bridgeport, and Cappy was talking, our head coach
Jack Capuano. Yeah.
Yep. And we're sitting there, and we had Pat Bingham too, and we're sitting there, and I remember looking at this guy, and he had glasses on, a flannel shirt, and he had like the curly hair, and I whisper over to Jack Hillen, who was my buddy from junior hockey. I said, is this another coach over here? And he's like, no, that's our captain. That's Watts. I'm like, oh my God, what?
This guy's a relic.
Yes. And he used the wood sticks, and he just, what a great guy though. Like, he was real kind of quieter, but when he'd say stuff, you know, he was just an older presence he needed, right, in the American League. So we went to the casino, Mohegan Sun Casino, and we had a great meal. We hit right there in the casino. We did all the fun games you do, where we did, the acts, and all the different rookies had to do. So we were doing all our different impersonations of all the vets, and we were pissing them all off. And I remember we had Michael. We had a bunch of meat on that team. Haley.
Every team in Bridgeport had at least three or four mutants on it.
Yeah. And he was like going after Lawson because Lawson did an impersonation of him, and he was trying to kill him. Like, he was chasing him all around the casino. And so we did all that. And it was really cool. We had a great dinner, and then guys were just doing some gambling. And I remember we get back on the bus like late night, and was it Frazier? He was in the back of the bus, Henry Frazier, and he was crying because he had lost like $400 or $500. And he's calling his like girlfriend who turned into his wife, and it was like one of those nights, tough to gamble on a rookie party because things could go bad, but it was a good setup because everything was there. We had a great meal, great time with the guys, just kind of bickering, and it was good. It was a good trip. So,
I think the meal is a really important aspect to it. I think the best one I had was in Texas with Peoria, and it was partly because we had such a fun meal. We had Scott Ford as a captain who kept everybody in check, and just a fun place to do it.
Right.
I'm looking back at your career, though, and you really started to bounce around a lot after that, and there's one instance I can think of that kind of define that. And it's a pretty amazing story, really, though, when you spent a year in Wilkes-Barre, went really deep in playoffs, carried the team, but there was a little bit of turmoil in the season before that happened.
Yeah.
You know, what went down there before you guys got deep into the playoff run?
Well, so that year before, like we talked about, I was in Manchester. I had a really fluky bad injury in practice, extended my leg. There was a shot from the point that got tipped by Anthony Stewart real tight, about 2 feet in front of me, and it got deflected real quick, kind of hit a stick, and I went full extension with my right leg, and the puck hit right on my my muscle fibers and everything, right in like my leg, thigh, groin area, and it just popped a hole, literally just shredded my groin muscle. So I never felt that pain in my life. I felt like burning sensation. I dropped. I was done for the year. Like they shut me down. I did two PRP injections. I went all the way through the summer. I couldn't get this thing to settle down. It was really, really a fluky injury. Like groin injuries are groin injuries by like tension, but this was tension and then an impact. You know what I mean? And my muscle fibers were completely, they just got ripped right through. So did the PRP and then I shut it down for like 3+ months and it was scary. You know, I didn't realize at the time because I went 12, 14 weeks of rehab in Manchester. So to answer your question is I went that summer. So that was the lockout year. That summer, Don Waddell was a part of Pittsburgh and they called. And Jason Botterell was the general manager. And he said, you know, they had talked to my agent and everything. And they're like, we want to sign you. It was a one-way American League deal. They're big fans, blah, blah, blah. Don Waddell speaks highly of you. And I'm like, well, that's great. This is the guy who signed me to my second NHL contract. And you know how it is. You have those relationships. You feel like this could be a good fit.
Yeah, and you feel comfortable with them. You know they're in your corner.
Right.
You've had that working relationship before.
Yeah, and Don was really nice. I remember call-ups back in Atlanta. He'd be in the locker room and say hello. He had Michigan ties. So here I am. I'm like, well, geez, Wilkes-Barre is an incredible place. It's Pittsburgh. They had said that they were figuring out their goalie situation. And, you know, Zats was on one way, so they're trying to maneuver that. And I was excited. Like, they came hard, and I was like, I get a good one-way contract. I want to try this organization out. I knew John Hines, the head coach, from past interactions with people I know. So I went in, and I was at training camp. I'm sorry, just a week before training camp, I was at Ohio State's pro camp in Columbus. Skating with Joe Exter, and day three, we did a goalie session, practice. Day three goalie session, 10 minutes in, just pop. And I felt my groin get kind of torn again and it bruised all the way down. So I had to call Wilkes-Barre and I was about a week or two before camp and they had me go to Pittsburgh right away and get an MRI and it ripped it again. Not as bad, but it ripped it. So I went to Wilkes-Barre basically injured because of this re-injury that happened when I was training and it was so strong, but then it was a setback, but it was scar tissue. As you know, that stuff happens. So I started off tough. They ended up signing Jeff Delore on a PTO because I was hurt. Member of Okun had the
clot. Blood clots, right?
Yep. So this is so weird how the time happens, right? Clot, Zats goes up. I'm like, if I was healthy, like, here you go, right? Great opportunity. So long story short, Delore and myself, and then we had Hartsey. This young kid out of Quinnipiac, great kid, had a hell of a college career. They signed him. So I'm behind the eight ball and I try to get back. I worked to get healthy the first game of the season. And then we went a month and a half and I had started like one game. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going, I just worked extremely hard to get healthy. And to the other side of it is Jeff was hot. Like we were winning games, but I'm sitting there like, well, you could mix me in. I won my first start, you know, or whatever it was. And I'm trying to figure out how I could get in. And I was frustrated, you know, because an injury like that, my first season ending injury, and then to not have an opportunity to compete to get in there after being the guy they signed in the summer versus a PTO was very frustrating. So long story short, we get to about month and a half, 2 months in, and they're like, we're going to do a switch. We're going to send you down to the Wheeling. And we're going to bring Hartzell up. And it was just a point, you know how it is. You get to the point in your career and you're like, I'm struggling to find that like home. I want to play. I got health again. And I wanted to just like, basically I was like done with all that up and down, all the movement stuff, even from year one. And I told them, I was like, why you didn't give me an opportunity? I kind of had a conversation and they were like, well, it is what it is. And I sat down with John Hines at the time. He's probably one of the best coaches. He is one of the best coaches I've ever had. And I just told him that. I said, Hinesy, it's just a point in time here where you got to just say like, no, like I want to play hockey if that's here or whatever it is. And he's like, careful what you do. And he was just like, make sure you think this through. And my agent, Elaine Waugh, was prepared for an interesting situation because I think Parisi did something similar a little bit before. But anyway, I just said no, like, I'm not going to go down. And, like, I'd like to get released because I want to go over to Europe. And so Al told that to them, and they got really mad. So they basically suspended me. They wanted all their gear back. And I was just like, wow, like, this got really heated quickly. Like, I was literally just saying, like, listen, you got a guy in a PTO, you got Hartsy, like, you're good. Like, I specifically said, like, tell him I just need to go overseas or somewhere and just start playing hockey because I had this injury. And the year before, I was all over the place with Winnipeg's new management. I just was getting kind of burned out, essentially. That's that word, right? So they were really mad. And I just at that point, I was like, well, if you're going to be pissed, then I'll be pissed. So I went home and I think I sat around for about a month and a half into Christmas. I got in two games to my name at Christmas. Okay. And I'm like, oh boy, this is the end here. Like, I was getting nervous, yeah. Man, you know? So I'm talking to Botterell, and he was good. Like, we had conversations through. He was mad, obviously, because, you know, you got to listen. They thought that he should listen to the organization or whatever it was. And so I sat at home. I was playing men's league. I was playing forward. Al would call me. I'd just walk back, get on the phone. I'd go back out, skate. And like, you're talking men's league, you know, I'm trying to stay sharp. And, so I'm playing men's league, and then I finally come to terms where he's like, you got to report to Wheeling, and then I'll open up the idea of trading you. And I'm like, all right, Botsy, let's timeline it so that we don't, you know, screw over Wheeling. Because you got two goalies there. You had Mike Condon.
Right.
You know, and you had Kieran Lahn, a Colorado Avalanche product. He was on an NHL contract. And I'm just going, well, you're going to bring me in the mix, this American League deal. Like, I'm on an American League deal. You got two NHL contract, it's Condon Montreal, and I'm going, don't put me there. So he was like, no, open time frame. I said, fine. So I go to Wheeling because I need to get moved at this point, or at least released to go to Europe. So I'm sitting there, and I'd play a game and I'd win, and then Clarkie'd play me the next night, I'd lose, and then I'd sit for 2-3 weeks, you know. And it was just like a weird situation that turned into like a month and a half, just a handful of games to try and get me a trade. Eventually, Botsy came in. He'd meet with me after a Wheeling game. And he'd be like, well, I've opened up the idea of, you know, trading you in conference. And I'm like, in conference? Like, this is an American League deal. Like, what? I'm not Marc-Andre Fleury here, man, you know. But that's why he's where he is. You know, he took everything real serious, and he was very detailed and diligent with his contracts. So, you know the ending to it is Hartsy started to struggle. Delore never kept a .900 save percentage that year. He was kind of up and down, but winning games. And sure enough, they come calling. And I remember looking at Clark, hey, is this a joke? I've just been suspended for like 2 months, put in Wheeling for months. I've only played 6-7 games on the year, and now they're going to call me up.
Living in cottages in Wheeling.
Yeah, that was
a whole nother story.
This is a whole nother story. I mean, the boys were great. Like, it was, you had deer literally walking into cottages. I mean, we did a lot of stuff. I made the boys take the mattresses out of the cottages, and we were going mattress sledding down these hills on this golf course. Like, we made a good time out of it. Miles Harvey, there's a couple guys, and Condi Bear. We had fun. A lot of wood fire wine talks. It wasn't Voda Box, Kenny, but we had Condi and I had a lot of wine, just talks about life, you know.
Yeah.
So they call, and I'm like, what is this, you know? And trade deadline was coming, so I go up, and I back up the first game. I go in, and then really to sum it up, it was a little back and forth because Brad Treveling there, the general manager of Calgary,
right.
He traded for me years prior when he was Portland's.
With Arizona.
GM. Yep. Arizona had always, they wanted to trade for me the year after. He'd always been around, even to Binghamton. And I appreciate that out of Brad. If I could say thank you, it was that. We only connected the one time, but I wish it was later. But anyway, he said he went to Botsy and tried to trade. And then I started playing. And I played a game. We won. I won. And I went on a run.
Yeah, you were an absolute heater. 1-5-6, 9-3-2, 11-4-1.
Yeah, and you know, got goalie of the month in the American League, which is really hard to do. You know, like it's an incredible league, and like I got that honor. I was like, wow, like our team was awesome. We had great players. I mean, it's Tom Kostopoulos was our captain. And you, as a goalie, you have to have everything kind of click, and it did. And it was right timing. Heinze, incredible coach. Nazzy, or Elaine Nazareth, our assistant's awesome. Everything clicked, and we ran. We ran all the way to the conference finals, and Botsy would come in, and I'd shake his hand after games. You know, he said, "You're sticking for the rest of the year." And I say it this way is, I always wanted to prove him right because he was the one that signed me, you know, and it was a little back and forth if it was my fault to some degree, but I also had the right to say, this is it. Like, I didn't want to do that anymore. And I had thought I had better opportunity by signing with them a one-way contract, and they went and got a PTO. So I had my reasons. They had theirs. In the end, we made an unbelievable run. We lost in game 6 of the conference finals. And we won a couple game 7s. It was awesome. It was the best pro run I had. We were so close to going to the finals. I'll cherish that memory in such an amazing year. And I don't even know how many games I ended up playing after only having 2 games at Christmas. I mean, I thought that was a feat in itself. Just from a fortitude standpoint, it was like battling through, sticking to your guns, being confident, and respecting people like I did. And today I see Botsy from the coaching side of things. I say hi to him, and I'm thankful that he gave me that opportunity. So,
I mean, is there any greater feeling in sports than winning a game 7 as a goaltender?
No, I don't think so. Just because everybody has to just go to war. The intensity, the speed, the sacrifice, the block shots. I mean, the saves that are so crucial can change a game. I had a Milwaukee game 7 in Chicago, was a part of one with Texas. I mean, they're incredible. They're unbelievable.
It's my favorite moments. I mean, you just can't replicate that in anything else in life. Having everything on the line, everybody watching.
Yeah.
It's great stuff.
Yeah. And the feeling after is
Oh, man. Because
you're so exhausted.
Yeah. You're gassed, but you're just so content and happy with what you've just accomplished. And you're looking forward to the next round.
Yeah. Yeah. And to look around the room to see the guys, it's just the closest thing to being a part of, you know, that group, that army that, you know, you go to that battle and you leave and you're like, we just got the win. Like, it was an incredible, could have went either way, right? Game yeah. 7. And they're special things to be a part of, for sure.
Man, this has been a blast. I'm so happy we could reconnect and tell some stories. We both have plenty of them because we're firmly in the relic status at this point. So yeah. I wish you best of luck as a coach, and have fun in Des Moines. And thanks again for joining me today. And I'll see you down the road. I'm sure it always happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate, you know, you having me on.
Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Please make sure that you like, comment, leave a rating, subscribe, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere that you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.